I love noise. I'm the addict. My name's Luann. My home group is Living in Recovery Thursday night, Terman Avenue in Bellevue. We are a progressive study group. And I've been there a short while, and I will tell you that I feel right now that I have the best home group in Narcotics Anonymous. And that hasn't, I haven't felt that way for a while. And it's important for me to feel that. So I searched to find a group, and I heard Cheryl talk about earlier, and I heard Cheryl talk about on the way up, because we were listening to her a little bit about the traditions, that she's had a group that for a long time that is a literature meeting, and when I heard her say that in the tape, I started to reflect back and think about that I've always had a home group that was a literature meeting. I'm not one to go to a lot of discussion meetings, and I like literature-based meetings because I like to hear what they have to say, and I like to hear what other people have to say about the literature. And for me, it's the literature that keeps me alive and free. So being asked to speak on the traditions for me is an honor, and being asked to speak about the fifth tradition is no coincidence. I celebrated an anniversary this month and got to chair my home group on my anniversary and chose the fifth tradition. So it's one that whenever I'm asked to chair and I get to choose, I usually choose a tradition. Because I don't think we read them a lot. I think people go over the steps, and I think, we like to hear a lot of the readings. And in our home group, we read from both. It works how and why in the basic text. So it's the chairperson's choice to choose what they want to choose. And we usually, they usually choose the basic text, and they usually choose who is an addict and why are we here, and which are really great, but I don't know that we always go over the traditions. And the traditions have... I don't know in the very first years that I was here, but as I stay here, really makes me realize that it's what keeps me grounded in areas of my life. The steps taught me about me. The steps taught me that I'm a person worthwhile, and I can live in my own skin, and that that I'm really comfortable with who I am today. The principles allow me to live in the world with conflict. The principles allow me to live in Narcotics Anonymous, not always believing what you say or liking who you are or liking what goes on around me. But it helps me to be tolerant and to be a better person with you. Because once I'm okay with you, like, I get so much better with me. So, Tradition 5. And I cannot, I don't know, why in the world, Cheryl, I asked for your book here, because I can't feel a thing. I had some surgery this year, and it has changed my vision. I would guess, technically legally blind at this point because I've lost vision behind my one eye. So it, makes things a little fun. But each group has the one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And Lydia said it when she read our message, that an addict, any addict, can lose the desire, can stop using, lose the desire, and find a new way to live. And then our message is hope and the promise is freedom. And you know what? I don't know that I have ever heard that spoken without getting chills. Ever. In 20 years. Heard that spoken without feeling that that is so incredibly powerful. That I can lose the desire and stop using and find a new way to live and have a life worth living. And the promise is freedom. It's pretty powerful. We recently, because we read this in my home group, we talked about it, and we talked about our primary purpose. And we talked about our primary purpose as a home group. And we have what's called a newcomer position. And when I got there, I got elected to the newcomer position. And I thought, okay, this is cool. I've never had this position. I've never even heard of this position. And I've been around for a long time. And my job is to stand up every meeting and say, you know, if you're a woman and need to know about Narcotics Anonymous, I'm here. And I thought, how cool is that? And that when I see someone come in who's at my home group for the first time, who is picking up a one-day key tag, or who just during the meeting expresses help to gather the other women around, to get a list of names and numbers, which we would probably do anyway. But, you know, the book talks about, you know, that we sometimes get lost in our own stuff and that I'm having a bad day, or that, you know, I'm involved with my own ego, which I know most of you will find hard to believe, and especially my husband, that it's not all about me, that, you know, that I forget that there's someone there that's hurting. And that this position ensures that we're not going to forget this person. You know, this position, and there's a man and a woman that both stand up, and it, you know, and that we have over a couple years clean, and that we make sure that we grab up that newcomer and that we tell them, this is where I'll be tomorrow, and this is where the other meetings are, and this is, you know, this is Narcotics Anonymous's primary purpose. And are there any questions that you might have? And, you know, I think about when I came in and there was a group of women who grabbed me up like that. But I also think about that, how it makes something sometimes a little bit easier to go over to someone and say, I'm here to help. I wasn't always ready to go over and say, I don't know anything about this. Because I walked in like, I've been here for 10 years, even though I look like a dirty rat. You know, but I wanted you to think that I was already here and knew what it was about, because I didn't want to come in acting like I needed help. So this position, it is kind of cool. And when we talk in our home group about our primary purpose, and we talk about what our job is, and what the fifth tradition means to us, you know, that there are people standing at the door waiting to greet people, and that we have an atmosphere of recovery. And that, how do we promote that atmosphere of recovery? You know, pretty powerful. The fifth tradition, for me, just ensures that I'm going to, and that my home group, and that the people I surround myself with, that we continue to talk about the primary purpose here in Narcotics Anonymous. Because, you know, as an addict, I am so easily led, you know, over here and over there, and, you know, bright lights, and I'm running from this way to this way, and retreats and conventions and literature and this month, the Packages of Hope, and whatever, but that, you know, that my primary purpose here and that our primary purpose here, you know, to keep our message alive and our fellowship free. You know, to ensure that the addict, whether it's the person walking in or the person that's been here 20 years, 30 years, that's hurting, knows that we don't have to use this. And that there's a solution. And she'll talk about solutions in the second tradition, that there is a solution today. And the fifth tradition keeps that solution alive. I have learned from listening to my sponsor that to look at the tradition in my life outside of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, when I think about the primary purpose for the other parts of my life, um, I just got a new boss. I loved my old boss. I had a good relationship with him. I thought he was a wise and a good teacher. And we got a new one. And I'm not so sure about this guy. He's new and he has zip personality, you know, and in our office we always discuss, are you a dog person or a cat person? And he said he was a fish person, and that pretty much told me where he was right there. So, but he discussed on his first day in our first meeting our primary purpose of our department. And I thought that was kind of cool. He talked about that, that our department doesn't necessarily deal with external customers, but we have internal customers, and our job is to get them this, 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 and this. And I thought, oh, that's pretty clearly defined. And, and he wasn't a cat person, so he ranked up a couple little things for that. But I started thinking about my primary purpose at work, because there's a lot of conflict right now. And I said it when I started, it is that the steps helped me to see my part in it. The steps helped me to take an inventory daily, and the steps helped me to remember to, stop, and I'm powerless, and to pray. And but the traditions helped me to understand what's really going on within the confines of this. And, I told my husband on the way up, I've been okay for the last couple weeks, and it's because daily I am remembering humility, and I am doing simple things, and the fifth tradition is huge in that. I'm remembering that my primary purpose at work isn't to have everybody like me. And that my primary purpose at work isn't to be the one that tells everybody what to do my way or not at all. And that the primary purpose is to be there and to serve the internal customers that I serve and to make sure that you get your paycheck and it's right and to make sure that that the information that I give you is true and just and quick. And that has changed. The fifth tradition has changed from me coming home every day, sick at my stomach, and eating sugar and looking for cake, to being okay to live with me and the people around me, and to being okay and not wanting to use. We talked about at the beginning when Lydia read up the statement, we don't talk about today what that substance might be, because, standing up here, it's always about the drug for me, always. But, after years of recovery, it can be control, and it can be a cake, and it can be jewelry, and it can be tax, and power. And all those roads will lead back to drugs. All those roads for me will lead back to drugs every time. I was thinking about the fifth tradition after we had our group conscience on Thursday night, and someone else mentioned that they had a group conscience. And, I said, as a group, I think we do really well in carrying the message. And with an atmosphere of recovery. We're involved in our area, and we probably have 4 or 5 home group members who are serving on an area level and who are involved and in the middle. And we have a core base that shows up. But we had a group conscience, and I felt like that Danny was talking about rushing through it. And I don't know that we rushed through it, but I think we were being so rigid that we weren't allowing for teaching people, and not necessarily the newcomer, people that had been there a while, teaching them what this is about. And I think that we have a duty, an obligation. If I'm supposed to remain teachable, then I need to learn how to teach. And I believe that as a group, our primary purpose and our group conscience, after we invite the loving God in, that we need to express to everyone how we do this, and that we need to teach people, and that we need to show the way. And I don't think we did that. And it's been on my mind because, you know, I left on Thursday and it just didn't sit right. And as I read through the traditions, I'm getting clearer. And with the fifth tradition, you know, I would think that wouldn't apply at all because it's not about group conscience and it's not, you know, it's about carrying the message. And it's about our primary purpose. And, you know, if I take the primary purpose and I apply it in that situation, it's absolutely perfect. What's the primary purpose within our group conscience? And how do we deal with it? And what do we do besides that? You know, and those are the questions I need to go back and ask. Those are the questions that we need to talk about, you know, in our next group conscience. The traditions open up, and the fifth tradition opens up this whole world of possibilities for me. You know, when I look at it and I read, you know, the few sentences and I look at the spiritual principles and integrity, probably of all the words in there other than prudence, because Cheryl reminds me that I need to break out in song when I say that one. But when I think about integrity, I love that word. And the fifth tradition, one of the spiritual principles is integrity. And she'll talk about saying what I mean and meaning what I say. But if actually, if I don't stand for something, I'll fall for nothing. I'll fall for anything. You know? And today, I can stand on the spiritual principles and know. We got here this morning and they weren't set up to register. And I was real clear after Phil spoke, because they said, oh, she's speaking down here, and I wanted to come down here. And I was really clear that before I spoke, you know what? You need to register. This is a registration-only event. And you know what? Years past, I may have said, I'll do it later, and then got forgotten. Well, there's $30 that I don't need. That's not what this is about today. God, do I want to get loaded over $30 on registering for a retreat? I don't think so. Not in this life. But do I want to support? And the primary purpose of this retreat, and what's their message? They clearly read it, and they asked me to register. So before I stood up here, I wanted to make sure that I was part of their group conscience. Traditions keep me alive and free. It talks about responsibility. What was coupled with this in the heading was responsibility. And I may be the only basic text that somebody ever sees or hears. And if I'm wearing an NA t-shirt and I'm flipping you off down the road, or I'm standing up here speaking without registering, or I'm showing up at my home group late, not helping set up and leaving, not addressing the newcomer, not carrying the message of Narcotics Anonymous, I don't think that's very responsible. Starts with, you know, all actions that I have start with me. And I love when we talk about keeping our fellowship alive and free. You know, there are certain sayings that just kind of resonate and that I think of and that make me feel and secure in the love of the fellowship and keeping our fellowship alive and free. Because you know what? This is my fellowship. I belong here. I survive here. I recover here. And the fifth tradition gives me, gives you, gives all of us the tool to do that. I'm Natalie. My name's Luann. Thank you very much for letting me share.
Okay, I would like to introduce our second speaker, Jerry.
next. We have to find Jerry. Okay. I can't introduce Jerry because he's not here. I guess it's in here. Okay, well, we please have just for the day from the podium, please. His name is Jerry from Manchester. I think he's from the Pitna group for the NA. Welcome, Jerry.
Jerry!
You're here!
Deep breath.
Thank you. Wow. Hi, everybody. My name is Jerry, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Jerry.
Man. Let me just go over the last 24 hours. And I have been looking forward to coming up here and speaking. I do a little electrical work on the side. I've been doing some work for this church. And, you know, I project it's going to take me X amount of time to do certain things, and it never works out that way. And I wake up yesterday morning, I guess about 6 o'clock, I say I'm going to go to my regular job, I'm going to do this electrical work. I'm going to get done about 9 o'clock. I left there at 5:15 this morning. So that means I went home and got about 2 hours worth of sleep and tried to run up here. So all that stress and tension that maybe y'all was feeling about whether the speaker was going to come, I was feeling it 1,000 times trying to get my way up here. My car, I got everything in my car, right? I got electrical stuff, I got papers, I got everything, and that's pretty much how my head is right now, but The scenery on the way up with the lake, I said, if I don't speak, it's fine. There's a lot of people that can do this, can talk about the fifth step. And my mind been so congested this last week and a half that just seeing that lake kind of reintroduced me to the peace that I'm looking for. And it was okay, well, it's worthwhile. It's worth it no matter what. It's worth it. Just me getting to a place where I can kind of wind down a little bit and to really appreciate what this thing called recovery has offered me these last 23 years. I'm real grateful to be here. I want to thank God for passing the committee to have me here to speak. I say that in all honesty and humility. The topic that I was asked to speak about today is the fifth step. I belong to a support group of guys, and we talk about the steps. We love going the steps. We talk about the benefits of going the steps. One of the gentlemen that's in my support group that is actually here right now speaking on the fourth step. But the fourth step talks about admitting to God ourselves and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step five. I'm sorry. And I find it very, very, very interesting to this step to me is about intimacy. It's about humility. It's about relationships. I set out on a mission years ago to destroy the relationship with Jerry, myself, and toward the end of my addiction, you know, you hear a lot of us talk about the low self-esteem and all that kind of stuff. And I had to be reintroduced to myself. You know, I found out that, you know, just going backwards a little bit about this fourth step, it was, there is so much denial with this illness that I have, that there is a lot of things that I couldn't see about me, let alone admit it to people. My denial was thick, and people saw things about me that I denied, that I couldn't see. And there were some other things that I saw I just refused to take a look at. Relationship with God has been always a want. You know, it's always been something that I wanted to do. And I heard a lot of people talk about God. You know, my mother had me going to church and Sunday school and stuff like that. My introduction to God was around the church. But I always had this thing like, I wanted to know who and what God is, or who and what God was. And it took me coming to the Narcotics Anonymous to kind of get reintroduced to and start finding the God of my understanding that I could actually have an intimate relationship with to talk to. Because I used to think people were kind of weird, you know, that you would see people praying and doing different things and talking to God and stuff like that. I mean, it wasn't weird in the sense that it was, I think it was weird because I didn't do it. It was something that I aspired to, that I wanted to have this kind of connection with and really go all out and have a God of my understanding. But the point that I'm making, that it took me time. It took the other steps to get me to a point where I felt intimate enough to admit to God about me. I heard a gentleman say, or it might have been a lady and a female, that there's really nothing that God doesn't know about me. And once I started getting that concept, the God of my understanding, it started making a lot more sense, because the God that I understand today does know everything about me and does know everything. And in admitting these things to God was something that God already knew. The exact nature of my wrongs. Through working the steps and reading the steps and listening to other people share about the steps, I've learned something. That the step of admitting to God, myself, another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs, wasn't just about these bad things. They were some bad things, but it wasn't just about the bad thing. When I start looking a little bit more carefully, it has certain questions about when did I lose my dreams and all that kind of stuff. And what it led me to in the readings is that the reason that I had to admit that these things were wrong, not because Phil said it was wrong, or Drew said it was wrong, or my mother said it was wrong, or my dad said it was wrong. There was something in Jerry that said these things were wrong. And what I'm getting in touch with over the years is that it's my righteousness that makes it wrong. And that's what I had aborted years ago. I've had a conscience at some point in my life. There always was this whisper of something saying, Jerry, don't do that, or that's not cool, or even people teaching me. It wasn't just an inner thing, but people did teach me about right and wrong. And I think, or I know that the step is trying to get me in touch with my spirit, my righteousness, not just the fact that Jerry, you know, you're on the opposite side of this thing and doing wrong, but the only thing that can make it wrong is something right in you. And I had to kind of get back in touch with, stop aborting the part of me that intuitively knows when things are right. And stop being controlled by this lower power that it talks about in the first step, this addiction as we know it to be, and start communicating with God and humbling yourself before God and letting God work with you. So that was a revelation for me, that there are some decent things about me, and I need to learn how to get in touch with my spirit so I can continue to have the spiritual awakenings to guide me for the rest of this journey. I said earlier about admitting things to myself. There was so much denial about stuff that, you know, it took a process like this to take the veil off, to lift the denial about me, to give me the honesty and the courage to admit some things about me and still know that God loves me. Because I had that fear that my God wasn't big enough early on to accommodate all of my character defects and all the things that I've done. I just didn't make God that big. I just looked at it like, if he is the dude that they say he is, then what I know about him is that he's going to punish me relentlessly. And my understanding of God has gotten bigger, so I'm a little bit more intimate. I can talk and trust that when I admit these things, that God loves me. He loves me exactly the way I am. And I heard this in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, but he loves me too much to let me stay the same. And there's some things that need corrected. There's some things, Jerry, that you just can't continue to do. I come from a place that you don't tell people everything. You strategically plan who you want to know what based on the outcome or the benefits that you want in a given situation. So to admit to another human being the exact nature of my wrongs was hard. You know, I've always been a loner. I have a general trust in human nature. I've always gotten intelligence and deceit mixed up. You know, I've always been confused about them two things. And to trust somebody and to feel exposed has never been a strong suit of mine. So searching around and surrendering to this process and actually admitting to my sponsor some of the, you know, the gook was real hard. You know, I'm one of them type of persons that I'm very sensitive. Matter of fact, I was a sensitive man when sensitivity wasn't in. You know what I mean? So I'm always worried about people judging me. You know, I'd rather have the image of a well-doer and hide my garbage because the image was important to me because I was so sensitive. And it took to build a relationship with my sponsor, and I needed a non-judgmental man, a man that was also sensitive, that was committed to recovery, kind. This guy would teach me lessons like He would do things for me that I knew I was incapable of doing for another human being. Y'all with me? Like I feel like, oh, I couldn't have gave him that. I don't know how did he give that to me? How did he give me, hypothetically, why did he give me $40 to do that little bit of job when if somebody did it for me, I would have been trying to do him down to 10 or something. So I met a man that allowed it to be a little bit more safer for me to do a fifth step. And it was scary. I started getting in touch with that my behavior is slightly different than the exact nature. You know, I may do some things, but I had to get in touch with the exact nature. Like, what's motivating me underneath the behavior? Like, you know, sometimes I have some needs, but I don't know how to get my needs met. So I'll do inappropriate things trying to get my needs met because I'm not always in touch with my needs. I'll just act out on something, and it might take a season or two for me to get in touch with. I was trying to fulfill this need, but I had this inappropriate behavior. And I might, because I'm obsessive and compulsive, like I said, I might run with that for 3 or 4 seasons only to find out that it don't work. But it wasn't necessarily the exact nature of my wrongs. You know, I could have been dealing with some things around loneliness or some other type of thing that I couldn't cope with and maybe acted out several different times in different ways in different years for some other kind of non-acceptable behavior. And those are the things that after I started getting comfortable with the program, some of the stuff I could extend out to a group conscious. You know, I could start sharing some of the things in group and, you know, at a meeting or at a need or something like that. But, you know, some of those things were real personal, real private. And just like it took me a while to trust God, it took a while to trust my sponsor, it took me a while to trust the rooms. And, I mean, I've even spoke sometimes, and you know how sometimes when you have so much toxicity in you, it feels like vomit, and you know it's going to come out, but you don't want to say what you know you need to say. And I remember going up in the podium and telling people, man, I don't give a what you do with this. I got to get this stuff off of me and out of me. And sometimes the dis-ease is so overwhelming that the spiritual awakening or being led by the Spirit is greater than the pain that I'm going through, and I just got to let it go. And I learned how to trust this program. I trust the group conscious. I trust that people here are trying to do the same thing that I'm doing, which is growing along spiritual lines, and that you're not going to judge me, that I can take my circle a little bit more, and I can tell my sponsor, and I can tell y'all, and y'all not going to judge me, because y'all basically are in the same boat. You know, basically in the same boat. And that's why I love this program, because it's, you know, I don't know what's out there in the world at large, but I know what Narcotics Anonymous has done for me. And it has afforded me to learn who I am to some degree. And allowed me to trust enough to share some things to discover who I am, because that's what I believe this whole process is. It's a discovery. It's a journey, but it's a discovery. You know, when I was driving up here, it reminded me of recovery in the sense I don't know where I'm going. I got some general directions, but I'm stressing. Y'all with me? I'm taking a step forward. I'm moving forward. I even got something that tells me this is where you're going, but I'm still stressing. And after I travel so far in this process, I'm still worried, am I going the right way, even though the direction says 8 miles, or 6 miles, or 5 miles, or do a first step, or a second step, or a third step. Even though it's telling me I got this inherent stress thing. And then at some point, though, on a given day, in a given situation, I'll see the lake. You know, I'll identify with something in the program or something in me or something somebody says or something, that general feeling. Because one thing about being in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, when I first got here, I didn't know exactly where I was going or what I was doing. But every now and then, I would have a general feeling I'm in the right place. It would just be a general feeling I'm in the right place. And that's what happened even on the way up here. You know, it was like a breakthrough. You know, once I seen the lake and everything, I started like, okay, you know, okay. Text them and tell them, I'm okay with you getting an alternative speaker. I really am. You know, I ain't that important. I've come to terms with, I just ain't that important. And people need to be sitting around waiting for me to speak because I'm late. So this journey is, like I said, I don't know about the world at large, but I know Narcotics Anonymous, there's something going on up in here. You know, it's this step here alone, demands that I discover within myself, some levels of humility. Courage, develops intimacy, something that I've always wanted but never knew what it was. Like I told you, when I went to rehab, they told me I was a loner. If you knew me when I was younger, and you picture a little kid with his fingers through the fence watching other people play, but never feeling like eye to eye, like connected. I always felt like you had a little edge on me. I never knew what the edge was, because I always judged you to want something physical on the outside. And this level of intimacy that this step alone provides, or helps provide, because it's fearful. You know, even after work, matter of fact, there's a young man that I sponsor, and he did his fourth step, and now he's finished his fifth step, and he talked about how vulnerable he feels. And I say, I know the feeling. You know, I'd rather tell you 15 things and omit 4. You know, that's my preference. So I can kind of, you know, I don't know how you're going to take it. You know what I mean? And at some point, it doesn't matter how you take it. And that's what this step is about. It's about me wanting to get better bad enough. I think I had sent a friend of mine this card that kind of truly reflects what I'm trying to say, even though I'm going to paraphrase it, and I'm probably going to mess it up, but I'm going to try to say it anyway. And it talks something about the pain of remaining tight in the bud was greater than the risk of blossoming. And I think that's kind of what the fifth step and the fourth step is about. You know what I mean? We can't stay that way too long. It's going to be too painful. We got to get that toxic stuff out of our system. We got to get a clean slate. Like, say it. Just get it out. You know what I mean? Rather than carrying that garbage around for the rest of our lives like we promised that we're going to do. And I think I'm close to done. I'm going to enjoy the breeze. And well, let me tell you another thing, too. While I'm working at this church, right, they're having this conference. They're going to be like 52 churches coming through and all this kind of stuff. They got these great big ceilings. They got to be about 25 feet high. Now, they want ceiling fans in these churches because they couldn't afford the air conditioner. And I had to crawl up in this loft to do the wiring. I am burning up there, man. I'm coming down with soot and dirt and all this kind of stuff. So, out here in this breeze right now, this is real, real nice. And what the program has taught me was to do the best you can. So, I could have left last night and said, you know, y'all fend for your own, for yourselves, because I'm out of here. But I stayed there till 5 o'clock because I wanted to make sure that I did as much as I could do so that they can be functional for this week-long conference. And so like I said, I left here about 4:15 this morning, and I might have had about an hour and a half sleep. I can't remember, except in my using days, that my eyes have been open for 24 hours. And that's how long it's been. I was up 24 hours and 2 hours of sleep on the 26 and 27 hours. And again, I want to thank God for touching those hearts who found me worthy of speaking in the Narcotics Anonymous meeting. My name is Jerry, and I'm an addict.
Hey. Can we please have Jeff from the day? Jeff for the day from the podium. Okay.
All right. I'm Danny, I'm an addict.
Hey, Danny.
Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using, and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Thank you. Okay. I would like to thank our speakers, Luann and Jerry, for speaking today and sharing their experience, strength, and hope. We do have a nice way of closing. Can we please pull a circle and a heart?